Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
All right, I'm Ron Tobias. I'm the Executive Pastor of Spanish River Church in Boca Raton, Florida, and this topic is becoming a sending church. That's probably not something you've heard on this conference at all. So we're going to hit it again. But before I do that, let me pray. Father, we thank you for this day. Thank you for your love for us, your grace and mercy. And thank you for the opportunity you give us to be a part of what you're doing in this world. And I pray, Lord, as we talk today, that we remember that it's all because of you and for you. And that you just give us an opportunity to be part of it. I pray that you might bless our conversation, help to bring glory and honor to your name and your name alone. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. So I'm going to talk about becoming a sending church. And Spanish River Church is what I know, because that's where I've been working. Been a part of that church for 37 years. And we've been involved in planting churches for about that same time period. So I'm just going to give you a quick overview of who we are. And then I've got some points on what we do as far as the sending aspect. The last seminar I talked to, I spoke at was our, just the one before this was on multiplying. I'm not really sure what the difference is between the two. So, but I know one thing is if you're a sending church, you're probably multiplying. But if you're multiplying, you're not necessarily sending. So let's, I'll just say that. But Spanish River Church is a Presbyterian church, PCA church. It turns 50 next year. We started planting churches, like I said, a little more than 30 years ago. And what we did was we kind of moved away from the traditional missionary model, where we took 10% of our general contributions, put it towards missionary projects, missions, and steered towards basically just church planting, both internationally and nationally. So we take about 60% of our church planting budget and put it towards U.S. church plants and another 40% towards international church plants. Obviously, the sending part of our ministry is more local, more South Florida, and I'll get into kind of our strategy for that, a little bit of things we do in that area as well. But over those past 30 years, we've been able to support almost 500 churches over that period of time, and we're in 27 different countries at this point in time. Spanish River has been a part of funding churches that are that you would know the names of them, and some that you would never know the name of. And Spanish River was actually the founding church for Acts 29 back in the late 90s. And we started that particular ministry basically to fund churches outside our denomination. We were having a difficult time finding qualified guys that were that we felt would be good church planters with our own denomination. So we kind of stepped outside to fund churches that were not PCA churches, but still aligned with us theologically. And so we also were a part of supporting or starting Redeemer Church in New York with Tim Keller and some other churches you may or may not have heard of. So God's blessed the ministry tremendously. I think the part of the reason we've been able to do so much is because that's all we do. We're pretty laser focused on that. We don't get involved in a lot of other ministries or missions. It's just basically about church planting. And so when you do one thing and you're laser focused on it, and you do it for a long period of time, you can see great results come from that. But the topic here is really about being a sending church. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what we do more locally and how we've done that over the years. I know this has been probably quoted. I just got here today, so I haven't heard all the sessions. So if I'm quoting something you've already heard quoted, then consider it important, I guess. So Larry Walkemeyer, and I love this quote because I think it talks about us. In his book on Unleashing River Multiplication of Your Church, wrote this. He said, "The vision was to stop becoming a lake church and instead become a river church." He writes, "In a lake church, people flow in and stay. It seeks to get more and more people around one pastor in one place. In a river church, the people flow in but keep moving downstream. God takes them to other places to minister. The measurement becomes about flow rate instead of volumes contained, about gallons per minute instead of gallons retained." Now, I like that quote because we are Spanish River Church, not Spanish Lake Church, so it fits us really, really well. But that's really kind of been our strategy, is to raise up men and send them out. And I don't even know the numbers of how many we've done. I've never sat down and calculated that. But we're strategic in this way. One is we have a residency program. We've had internships. We've had different strategies that way. But really, at the end of the day, it's all about hiring men that we think can be church planters. So whether we're hiring for a position of a youth pastor or a small groups guy, one of the lenses we look through is, can this guy one day plant a church? And so we're constantly thinking about raising up people, sending them out. As you've heard at this conference, and I'm sure you've heard it if you're in the church planting world at all, is we need a lot more churches to be planted. There's churches that are failing every day, and we need to raise up good quality men to do that. So that's been kind of the calling that Spanish River has taken seriously, and we invest pretty large amounts of money into that work. So right now we take 20% of our general contributions and put it towards church planting. That does include a residency program, but most of that money goes right to church plants, both in the U.S. and around the world. This past year, we funded 77 different churches in different locations. And that number usually stays about that same in the 70s or so every year. They're on a rotating basis. We only will fund a church if it has a plan to become self-sustaining. So there's a lot of churches that we don't fund because they don't have that plan or that proposal in place. So we just kind of avoid those if we can. The reason we do that is because we want to plant reproducing churches. So in our model, in order to become reproducing, you have to be self-sustaining. And so I think one of the things we talked about this last session, but one of the things that's changing dramatically really over the last couple of years is the lack of resources available to churches, to church plants. And so I think nowadays it's actually, we used to work it on a 3-year plan. I think it's more like 5 or 6 or 7, depending on the area you're going into now, become self-sustaining. There's a couple different models that churches have used over the years as far as, you know, sending out people. And we've used all of them at one time or another. We used to have internships where we'd bring a guy in or a gal in and have them serve for a period of time in a different ministry. I think the internships for us was more for them to discern the call, not necessarily prepare for the mission. And now we do what we call a residency program. So we bring a church planter in for a period of somewhere between 18 months to 2 years. And he actually works on staff, and he gets a full salary. He has staff responsibilities. He oversees different ministries. And that's kind of the first part of his apprenticeship. The second part is more about preparing to plant. So we actually have two of the guys right here. This is David Rosa. And David has just launched a church in Hollywood, Florida on Easter. And so he's off and running, and his wife, Ruth. And next to her is Mike Veets. And Mike Veets is a current church planter and resident. He has been with us since August. And he's just now starting, actually working on his building his core team, raising his support. His church plant will be about 30 miles from Spanish River. Yep. So his, over the next several months, he'll be engaging in raising support, building core team, looking for a place to meet, all those fun things that church planters do. But the benefit of it is he gets a full pay at Spanish River Church during that period of time, and he's getting his education paid for, too. Mike's in the middle of getting his master's degree. Some of the benefits, yeah. No, our church flourishes because of it. Yeah, I think it's, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sure it depends who you ask that question, but from my perspective, I think it's created a healthy church, and people know that. So they're used to it. They're used to change. They're used to people kind of coming and going. Now, our senior leadership doesn't change. So we've had two pastors in our 50 years. And our first pastor was there for 43 years. He's passed away a couple years ago. And our current pastor's been there for the last 7 years. So, and of course, I've been there for 37 years. So there's some of us that are there forever, it seems. But for the most part, the guys that are coming in these other roles, now, not all of them go plant a church, and we're not saying they all do that, but that's kind of the lens we look through when we hire, is we're looking for somebody that can be that kind of leader. And really, at the end of the day, we figure if they can plant a church, you know, they need to be able to gather people, they need to be an evangelist, they need to be a leader, they need to have these these qualities that not only make them a good church planner, but a good small groups pastor, a good outreach pastor, all the other pastors that we hire. So it's but our encouragement to them while they're there is really for them to think through the church planting opportunity that's given them. So yeah. So anyway, I was talking about the benefits that we've had, and I think also that the church planner has as well. So one of them is assessment. Anybody that's ever planted a church has probably gone through that process. It's brutal, right? I mean, you have to go through, and you have to, depending on what process you went through. I know that Acts 29 has one that it's like a book you fill out. There's others that you go to that's a week long, where you're there with your wife and everything. And so, they're tough. But they're all limited, really, in what they can do and what you learn from them. From my perspective, the assessment process of having a resident is phenomenal because you have somebody with you for almost 2 years that you know their wife, you see their kids, you see how they raise their family, you see how they are in ministry. So, we don't have to go through the formal process. It's more the fact that we're just around each other for that period of time. We get a really good feel for the quality man that they are and their calling. And so the assessment process is really, really critical. I mean, so many new churches fail these days. I think it's 1 out of 3 that fail within the first 5 years. I read that somewhere. Don't know if it's true or not, but that's what I read. But it's hard. It's hard. So you want to get guys that are not only called to do it, but they're prepared to do it, and guys you feel confident supporting. So that's one huge benefit of it. I think the other one is just the training aspect. A lot of guys that go into church planting go into it because they come out of a dysfunctional church. And their thought is, well, I'm going to plant a church that's different than that last one. I'm not going to be like that guy. And I think the opportunity to be trained within a healthy church, I think we're healthy, mostly, is just really, really good for them to see what good leadership is, see what good programs are, to see how to raise money and good stewardship and all those type things can be modeled that way. So training is another one as well. The educational aspect, both these guys came to us with no theological training or very little. And so we have allowed them to complete that and funded it as well. And so it's a Master's of Arts in Ministry degree. It's in church planting, emphasis on church planting. And it's connected with Capital Seminary out of Washington, D.C. So like Mike said, it's a cohort model. So you're in a learning group. And all the guys, I think most of the guys at least, are going to be church planters or are church planters. So it's, then what are there, 12 in your cohort?
Yeah, we're at 12.
12 right now, okay. So that's another benefit, is just the educational opportunities that you can have in a residency program as well. Moving on, I think building the launcher core team. At the last session we talked about, that's such a key part of launching a church, is having those right people around you and people that are committed to the same thing you're committed to and have the vision for planting that church. And so Mike and David, being on staff at Spanish River for a year plus, had the opportunity to really ask whoever they wanted to ask, encourage whoever they wanted to encourage, and really vision cast to our congregation about their vision for this church plant and take whoever wanted to go. So we've had, I don't know that we had a whole lot of people go to Hollywood.
We got one family that moved there.
Yeah, you had one family move down there, yeah. And Mike's in that process now of talking to different folks. We actually have a pastor on staff at our church who's going to leave and go with them. So, which is good for you. So that's one of those situations that really it's a benefit, because we have him on stage regularly. He does announcements. He preaches. He's visible. He talks about his residency program. People know who he is. They're aware of his calling. And so we kind of open that door up to him to be able to really reach out to people that are called to go down to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, which is not a bad place to be called to. So the other benefit, I think, is relationship. And, I talk to these. Obviously, David's gone now, but not too far. So we talk regularly. We have that relationship. He has that relationship with not only myself and our lead pastor, but also any pastor on staff, as well as all the other churches we've helped support and funded in our area. So just being able to have that kind of ongoing relationship with like-minded people, guys that are in the same stage of church planting, is a huge benefit to being in a residency program and kind of being birthed out of that situation. So you want to speak about that a little bit?
Yeah,
and I think the coaching aspect, too, is the fact that you guys have access not only to our just staff, but people that are connected to us as well. I think, you know, when David was talking about the relationship with Epiphany Fellowship in Camden, New Jersey, you know, we realized really quickly that Spanish River Church, like you said, is a white church in a white suburb and not very diverse at all. And so when we're sitting there getting ready to plant a church in a very diverse area with an individual who doesn't look like me, we realized that, you know, we needed help because we didn't know much about that area, didn't have the expertise. So I think being able to bring in somebody who has that expertise, who has that knowledge, and saying, coach him and we'll fund it, we'll help you, but...
Can I get 3 more seconds right here?
No, let me finish first. He's not very coachable, but... But it's knowing what you know and knowing what you don't know. And then it's having strategic partnerships with people that can fill those gaps. And I think over the years, that's one of the things we've learned, you know, really, really well is to be fully aware of the fact that even though we've been investing in church planting for a long time, it's changing. You know, the world's changing, culture's changing, and we need to be, adaptable to all that kind of stuff. So, okay, go. Good. Thanks. Okay. A couple, I think, you know, reasons for being ascending church are, first of all, I think it's biblical and God calls us. It's part of the Great Commission. And, I think for us, you know, somebody mentioned, what's the cost to the church? Not financially, but I think relationally, it is a cost. There's no doubt about it. When you have guys come on staff that are, Mitch is a part of the Avenue Church. Casey Cleveland is the lead pastor of that church. Casey was a part of our church for, I think, 10 or 12 years. And so served very, very well, very, how you want to say it, popular speaker. People really enjoy listening to him. They really enjoyed the relationship with him. So when we sent Casey out, and not very far, I mean, Delray Beach is, I think you guys are eight miles away from us, something like that. And we knew that a couple of things were going to happen. One was we knew a lot of people were going to follow him. The second thing is we knew a lot of people were going to follow him with money. and we also knew a lot of good leaders were going to be following him as well. And so we knew there was going to be a cost to it, not to mention the fact that it was going to leave a pretty big hole in our own team because he filled such a huge role at our church. But, you know, the amazing thing is, and we've seen this happen every single time, is and it just goes to show the glory of God because he filled that role with somebody else who's doing a great job. But he's also raised up leaders. But in both churches, really, I think the opportunity for leadership development when you send a church out is pretty amazing because it creates space in your own church for people to step up, and it creates space in the new church for people to step up. So we're able to see guys that maybe they wouldn't be an elder or a deacon or a teacher at our own church, but a new church plant, they'll have that opportunity and they'll step into that role. And vice versa, it creates space within our own church for that as well to happen. So, yes.
I don't know if there's a Q&A.
Sure, go ahead. We pray.
Yeah. Okay.
Pray a lot. No, it's a good question. I think the answer is no. We kind of know what it's going to be. We sit down and we kind of know, you know, what the cost is going to be because most of the people that leave so the people that left and went with the Avenue Church, for example, most of them were at Delray Beach people, so they lived in that area, and we really kind of encouraged them first to go because we feel like we wanted the people that live in that community to be part of that church. And even though they're 8 miles away, it's still a different city, a different culture. It's completely different. Those folks don't really come to our church. Most people live in that community. So we knew the folks that lived there, and we kind of, you know, did the numbers and figured out what the cost was going to be. The good thing about sending, and especially in this case, is with the people, there was about 50 or 60 people that ended up going, I think, with the Avenue Church. Now, when you're, you know, a church of 2,000, 50 or 60 people is not a big deal, really. I mean, but when you lose an elder or two and some people that are substantial givers, then you start to feel a little bit. So we kind of knew who those folks were. We knew what that cost was going to be. But it also caused them to become self-sustaining quicker. So they were basically self-funded in a year. And primarily because 50 or 60 givers went with the church, people that were leaders in the church that knew. And so right away, within a year, they were self-sustaining. And second year, I think you guys were able to start funding other churches. Yeah, towards church planting already. So they're, what, 5-6 years old? 6 years, and they've already been able to give $125,000 away church planting because, you know, primarily because of the people that we sent. And the fact that they understood church planting right away, too. So a lot of those folks understood that. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, speaking to a little about what David said, is you have to talk about it all the time with people, and you have to encourage them. And so just talking about this church, for example, Delray Beach is the recovery capital of the world. There is more halfway houses in Delray Beach than per capita than any place in the world. And, you know, then I don't know the numbers, but it's hundreds and hundreds. And the reality is that a lot of people from the Northeast come down to Florida for the 30-day treatment. So New York, New Jersey, you get to go wherever you want. You know, they have state-funded or insurance coverage or whatever to go and get 30-day treatment. Well, you don't want to stay in New Jersey to do that, so you come to Florida to get clean and sober. So you move to Florida, you get clean and sober, you have to go into a halfway house. You end up getting a job, and you end up settling there, and you settle in Delray Beach, Florida, because that's where most of them are. So we were looking at this community and realizing that there was already PCA, our own denominational church, was already in the city, but it wasn't reaching that community at all. It just wasn't hitting it at all. So several of us had a burden for this community, and some of it was real personal because we had family that was basically in some of these halfway houses, and we saw the void that was happening in this community of a really gospel-preaching, effective church. And so we first started talking about it. It was more of a ministry. Should we open up a coffee house there, you know, some kind of recovery center or something like that? And then the more we talked about it, we realized, hey, that's church planting is what we do. Let's plant a church there. Not really knowing how it was going to go. I mean, some of us had a great fear that it was just going to be a bunch of drug addicts and alcoholics coming to it and nobody giving any money. That was kind of in the back of our minds, saying, how's this thing ever to become self-supporting. And what happened was Casey Cleveland, who was a part of our church membership, or our staff actually, was actually from Delray Beach, grew up in that city. And he felt the call. The same time we're praying about planting a church, he felt the call to go there and plant this church. And so we sent Casey. And again, you know, Casey, what Casey did and another staff person went with him, was they went around to the halfway houses and basically met some of the leaders. I think that's how they met you, right? I mean, because you were leading a halfway house at the time. And said, hey, how can we serve you? What are some things we can do to help you? And many of those halfway houses have to have meetings. And so several of them said, well, come on and have a meeting. You know, host a meeting. Well, you know, what's our meeting going to be about? It's going to be about the gospel, right? So that's what we did. We started going in there and hosting these meetings in these halfway houses. And next thing you know, we're seeing people come to faith and this movement growing. And that church is, how big is your church now? 250 in 6 years, self-sustaining. And you go in that church, and there are drug addicts and alcoholics there.
Half. Yeah.
About half the building is that. The other half are young families. You know, so it's this weird mix. It's, you walk in this room, and it's like you see, you know, the bleachers of the gymnasium. I guess you aren't in the gym anymore, are you?
No. We
yeah. But you see this kind of weird mix of, you know, and some of them come high to church. I mean, and some of them leave high. But it's just an amazing story of what God's done in this community. And really, you know, it was a risk on Spanish River's part because we thought it was going to be a huge investment. And it was, people-wise. It was a risk on Casey's part because who knew how this was going to work out. But now the Avenue Church is becoming a sending church. But the reason, you know, getting back to your question, the reason that is because we talk about it, we celebrate it, we you know, we talk about it all the time. Whenever we have a church speaker in our church, it's always a church planter that speaks. Whenever a church, we celebrated two anniversaries last week. I was in New York last week and San Francisco yesterday celebrating the 10-year anniversary of two churches we planted. And it's all about, you know, and we tell our people about that. We say, hey, here's what your investment did. Here's how God is using your financial investment and your personal investment in these churches. And so you have to celebrate, you have to talk about it, you have to encourage them, you have to vision cast. I do think that raising money for churches is tough, you know, especially for people that don't understand it, because they look around, they say, well, there's churches all over the place. Why do we need more to plant more churches? I mean, there's a lot of empty buildings. You can raise money for, you know, for the poor kids in Africa or something way easier than you can plant a church. But if you talk about it all the time, you explain it why, and you give them reasons to celebrate, then it becomes, you know, much more easy to that way. So, a couple things, you know, just hitting your question, too, about what are some steps to becoming a sending church. First of all, is just cast a vision. You know, you have to be able to really share with your people why it's important, why it's important for your church to be a part of that. I think the other thing is you have to budget for it, and you have to budget sacrificially, knowing it's going to cost something, and be willing to do that. You need to be able to raise the money, and you know that's part of casting the vision, is making sure that you can explain why you're doing that. I think you need to staff for that purpose, and that means staffing, you know, some experienced guys who can train up people, but also staffing with some young guys who might be called into ministry. So you have to do that as well. And the other thing is, don't get sidetracked by other stuff. You know, I talked about this in the last session about, you know, as pastors, everybody's got an idea for your church and what your church should be doing, right? I mean, people are coming to you all the time and saying, hey, why don't we do this ministry? Why don't we do that ministry? Why don't... And they're all great. None of them are bad ideas. Well, some of them may be bad ideas, but they sound good. And if you start doing all those things, that means you're not doing other things that maybe God's calling you to do. So for us, like I said at the beginning, we're laser focused on church planting. That's what we do. We don't send missionaries anywhere. We don't even, you know, if somebody from our staff wants to go to one of our church plants, they pay for it themselves or they raise their own money. It's nothing comes out of the church budget out of it at all. We do local ministries, like we have ministries to homeless and foster care programs and all those things like that. But we don't invest in those programs other places. We only invest in churches. And so it's becoming laser focused on it, not being sidetracked by a lot of things. Yeah, no, obviously not. It's interesting, you know, when you talk about whether a church is successful or not, I think that's kind of an interesting question because we just had a church in Wilt Manors, Florida, that we funded that decided to close the doors, and the guy's going to shut down after 3 or 4 years. And so he called me up, and we had lunch the other day, and I think he was a little embarrassed, you know, and probably a little scared about coming to me and telling me what he was doing because we invested a lot of money in that church. And you know, I asked him at the meal, I said, look, if you had all the money you needed and money was an issue, would you still shut the church down? And he said, yeah. He said, it's not about the money. It's really, he said, it's about, right now, it's about myself, about my calling, about my family. And he said to me, he said, I'm sorry that we're a failure. I said, no, you're not a failure. I said, every church has a lifespan. Your church just happened to last 4 years. Spanish River lasted 50 years. I don't know if it will last 51 years. I hope so. I still need a job. But you know, but in those 4 years, while he existed, people came to Christ. Lives were transformed. Marriages were saved. You know, a lot of things happened in those 4 years. It was effective ministry. Now, did it carry on the lifespan that I wanted it to and what I thought it should? No, but it wasn't my plan in the first place. It was all God's plan. So I think at the end of the day, you know, success is such a it's a term that we use, but we don't really know what it means. You know, when people ask me when does a church plant stop becoming a church plant, I usually say it's when it's self-governed, when it's self-sustaining, and when it's reproducing. Those are the three things I look at. I think once you reach that point, then you're not a church plant anymore. mostly through relationships with other church planters. I mean, we've been in a part of church planting for a long, long time and are connected to a lot of networks. So it's mostly, you know, word of mouth. Just quickly, I'll tell the story of Mike because that was an interesting story. So, in fact, it was about a year ago, right? Something like that, about a year ago. So I'm up here. My grandson was born about a year ago. They live in here in Orlando, so I was up here for his birth. And I get a call from – did you call me? I think you emailed me. Give me an email for this guy. He says, hey – someone told me to call you. I'm interested in planting a church in South Florida. And I'm up here at RTS now looking at maybe getting into their program. I was wanting to know if I could drive down to Boca and meet you. When I emailed him back, I said, well, it's nice, but I'm right here in Orlando. Literally, I was like right around the block from you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, 10 minutes later, we're meeting at Starbucks. And an hour later, I think I offered you a job. So,
it was 2.5 hours later
he asked me to my residence. Was it 2.5 hours? Okay. But, you know, it's one of those situations that, you know, God just opened that door up. And it was clear to me after meeting with him, say for me checking on his references, make sure he wasn't a wacko or something, that it'd be a good fit for him to come to Spanish River. So I look for, when I look for residences and where I look for church planters, the chemistry is really important. And, can they fit into our system? Are they going to be able to be a good part of our team? Because they're going to be on staff. So I'm hiring a staff person, essentially. I want to make sure that they're going to be effective and fit in with the culture of our church as well. I'm not sure why David came. That's a whole other question. Yeah. So, yeah, it's mostly through relationships. So people know about it. We don't go and promote or request even for church plants to come to us for funding, because we've been doing it for so long that people kind of know. So we have way more apply for funding that we can possibly support. So we don't need to go looking. So, yeah. When after the church is planted, you mean, or during the assessment? Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of what the assessment process is for. So, I think I said this earlier. I think most churches fail not because of competence, but because of character. And so, if you look at the churches that have been shut down over the last couple of years, it's mostly because guys have had some kind of moral failure. And so what we try to do is to avoid that as best we can by making sure there's good coaching, by making sure there's care for the wife, by making sure that, that we see that relationship between the both of them and it's healthy. Now, you can only see what they want to show you at the end of the day, but I think we've been fairly successful in avoiding some of that just by taking the time to ask the right questions and to engage in that. But I think when it comes to other areas, I would say that we are risk adverse when it comes to planting churches. And what I mean by that is we're very careful. So we won't fund a single man to plant a church. We just don't. That's just too risky for us. So we want them to be married. Want them to be married for a while and have a healthy marriage. We think that's healthier. Again, somebody asked. I said this the other day, and somebody said, "Well, would you not hire Paul?" I said, "No. I guess we wouldn't have, and we'd have missed out on that one." but Paul was pretty risky. So there's things like that we look at that we'll just stay away from because, even when it comes to looking at planting ethnic churches, we're not looking to plant necessarily a white guy in a black neighborhood. We try to make sure that they look like their neighborhood and they reflect it. And not to say that that can't happen and be successful, we just don't do it. So we try to stay away from things that we think are more risky. And part of that is just because we're protecting the investment that people give to us. So if we start making a lot of those decisions and seeing failures, then we kind of lose our credibility with our donor base. So, some of it's that. We will do plants. We will plant churches where we think we can raise money, too. So I'll just give you a quick example. We have a gentleman in our church that owned a whole bunch of sandwich shops in northern England. 102 sandwich shops, Subway sandwich shops. And so he lived in our town, but he operated this business. And I thought to myself one day, if he can build 102 sandwich shops in northern England, why can't he plant a church in northern England? So I, through networks and stuff, I found a church planter in Manchester, England that needed some money. And I found out when this gentleman was going to be over in Manchester for his business, and I arranged the meeting between the church planter and him. And we ended up encouraging him to give a lot of money to this church, to plant this church. That church is doing great. The guy actually went to the launch of the church and was a part of it. And has been, and every time he sees me, he thanks me for encouraging him to invest in that church in England. So, we are strategic in that way too, where we look for opportunities for people to use their gift of giving to do that. And I've done that in a couple different parts of the world where I think I can raise money for. Yeah, that's a great question. I'd say it's an area we need to work on. Now, like I said earlier, we work through network leaders in cities. So sometimes we don't have a very strong relationship with the church planter himself, but we try to do that. So, during the time they're funded, they're They have to come to our church planters retreat once a year. They have to fill out reports. And we communicate back and forth to them. After they're kind of off the payroll or off the funding schedule, then it's really up to them. They're invited every year to come to our retreat. We do visit them. We try to celebrate them with them when they have events. We encourage them to plant churches. And so what we do is we will almost always invest in a church plant that one of our daughter churches is planting. So if they come back to us and say, hey, I have a staff person who wants to plant in the city next to me, would you guys support him or fund him? 9 times out of 10, we're going to do that, especially if he's married. But we try to encourage them by making sure that we're team partnering with them on those projects. And so we've had a number of churches that have done that, and so it's that's a continued relationship. Some of them, and what happens is a lot of times the church planter moves on, and so the next pastor or even two or three pastors down the road, we don't really have a relationship too much with those guys unless they pursue it with us. So, yes? Yeah, you know, I think, are you the lead pastor of the church? So, first of all, you need to preach on it. You know, you need to get up there and talk about it and preach on it. And then I think the second thing is find stories where other churches have done it and share those stories with people. You can use us as much as you want. I can send them some to you. I don't know, you know, as far as resources go and books and that kind of stuff or literature, I don't know. I'm sure you could probably go on Tim Keller's library and find some good stuff, you know, that he's got on it. But I think at the end of the day, it's really going to have to come from you. And, you know, you have to go back to the Great Commission and say, this is what I believe. This is how I believe God's calling us to fulfill the Great Commission. And part of it is to raise up men. And I think the best thing that could happen is if you have somebody, you know, on staff or somebody who's an intern or whatever, and you can start, you know, promoting him, grooming him, having him speak and share, having him share about his call, and having people get excited from that perspective, I think is the best way to do it. But I don't know of any really resources that other than what they have here, which is everything. So everything. I know it's too much. I know. And I don't know if you guys have read anything on that at all. I haven't personally. Yeah, and I think the benefit of that too. The benefit of that as well, David, though, is the fact that you have two churches that really didn't do anything together at all. I mean, we're different theology, a lot of differences in those two churches, and yet we've come together to plant this church, and that's kind of a cool picture. And we're both excited about it. So their lead pastor and I text each other back and forth, and I texted him on Easter Sunday and said, "Hey, praying for you today, but also excited about David Rose." And he texted back saying, "Yeah, it's an awesome partnership." And so you start seeing things like that happen. It's kind of fun to be part of that. And, you know, the bottom line is you're seeing a smaller church where, like I said, we're 1,100 or 1,200 people to a 25,000-member church. And it's kind of an equal partnership. Actually, we're giving way more money than they are, but that's whole nother. but it's a partnership. And it's fun to see that happen. And I think that's, you know, that's a point that I should make is we... Spanish River has only planted one church, Spanish River Church. We partner to plant a lot of churches. So when we send someone out or when we plant a church, we're one of many funders. Now, we're usually the primary funder, but we're not the only funder. And we believe that's really a good thing to be, because I think if something were to happen and they were to rely on their total budget on us, that would not be healthy. So it's really critical, I think, for churches to for planters to be able to have a variety of supporters as opposed to just to one. And so we are able to do that because we do have churches like the Avenue Church. So the Avenue and Spanish River planted, I don't know, a couple churches together now. We're even down in Haiti together now and planting churches down there as well. So, yeah, we don't have a formula for that. It's based on their budget. And so, you know, you plant a church in Cartersville, Georgia, it's going to be a lot cheaper than New York City. So we might give a church planter in a rural area, you know, 35, 40,000 over 3 years, whereas a guy in New York City is going to get over 100. No, and we have no formula. We're trying to figure it out as we go along, to be honest. But I think, you know, we want them to become reproducing churches. So we make every effort we can to facilitate that. And so that is...
No matter how long that takes.
So part of that process is to making sure that they have, you know, enough funding to do what God is calling them to do. And that means us personally doing it or us helping them do that, then that's part of that, is making sure that the resources are there. I think the other part is making sure that the training is there and making sure that whatever they need, whether it's coaching or whether it's, you know, them going to some kind of class or seminar, it's making sure that they're equipped in that way. And I think the other way is probably just the matter of making sure that they have the right leadership as well. So, you know, we will coach and train them how to raise up elders, you know, how to have good leaders that come alongside you and are more supportive and not a distraction. And so we have been engaged several times with churches that have picked the wrong leaders, the wrong elders specifically. And we've had to step in and help them, help those elders find another church. Because, you know, there's a lot of times it's just interesting when people will look at a church plan as an opportunity for them to kind of have their own kingdom. And I don't mean the church planner, I mean somebody else. And so it's real important for that role. It can be so detrimental. I've seen it bring down a lot of churches. And so we have stepped in several times and helped them remove that person. And we can do it because we're funding the church. So, you know, we're able to kind of carry a big hammer in that way. And we don't do that often, but we have done it a couple of times over the years. Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things, launch team is obviously, so if you move in the area, the big question is, when do I launch, right? I mean, and now everybody has a phrase for, there's pre-launch, preview, you know, whatever. There's so many different terms that people use. I think that's a fine art. You can launch too early and you can launch too late. So we try to help them with that process and figuring out. We like to see people have anywhere between 35 and 50 people that are at least a church attenders, not necessarily core team or launch team, but people that will come on a Sunday morning. But in some areas you're not going to get that. Some areas you might have to launch with 25 people or 20 people. But I do think that's critical. I think if you launch with too few people, it's just going to be a struggle. And because when new people walk in, they see 10 people in there, you know, they're less likely to come back. If they walk in there and they see 50 people in a small room, it's just the dynamics of that. And so there's that aspect of it. So we do look at numbers. We do look at budgets. So we trace their budgets and make sure that it's going up and not down. And so if we like I said earlier, we get six-month reviews. So every 6 months we get a packet that the church planner sends to us with the numbers, the attendance numbers, the giving numbers. They send us a sermon that we listen to. They send us, there's a whole list of questions they have to answer. And so we go through those, and our board reads all those. We assess all those things. If we see patterns or we see things where they're going in the wrong direction, then we will go visit that pastor, bring him down, talk to him, and help him with, you know, or talk to his coach or network leader as well to try to help him steer him in the right direction. So a guy launches, you know, this is typical. We were just talking about this earlier with some other guys. You know, your first Sunday you launch, you have, you know, 60 people come. The next Sunday, it goes down. It always does. And almost every church planner will say, well, it's not going to happen to me. You know, we're going to maintain it. But the reality is every it always does. And so that's really depressing because, you know, you get 60 people. Next week you have 30 people because your parents didn't come and your cousins didn't come. And those people that, you know, that you thought loved you didn't come back. And so that's the people that will be with you. And those 30 people the second or third Sunday are the people that you're probably going to be able to count on. But it should be increasing. You know, if you don't see it increasing, you see it decreasing, then you have to pay attention to what's wrong. And so we will come alongside, just ask questions. And we'll listen to sermons, too. Our board listens to the sermons. And we talked about this in the last session. If we don't hear the gospel being shared, we'll do a warning the first time. Second time, we'll cut funding. And we are very committed to making sure that the gospel is shared at every single sermon. And we make all of our church planners go through a boot camp that we hold for that purpose. So it's the most important thing. If you're not sharing the gospel, you're not evangelizing why you're planting a church. So anyway, those are some of the things we look at. Yeah. I think we are about done.
Personal evangelism,
yeah.
How many times?
Yeah, exactly. And that's a good point. That's a good point. So, you know, in our denomination, the PCA, the job title for a church planters evangelist. That's the title that they have. And, man, if you're not an evangelist, if you don't have a heart for the lost, if you don't want to share the gospel and see people come to faith, don't plant a church. It just drives me nuts when I see some of these reports. And we ask them how many people, the question is, how many people in the last 6 months have you personally shared the gospel with? And we'll get reports back saying 2-3 people. And, you know, that's not acceptable. So if you're a church planter, that's like your number one job. I mean, you should be out there sharing the gospel. It's not just about, you know, who comes to your church and sharing. It's people you're meeting in Starbucks and people, your neighbors and all that kind of stuff. And if you're not doing it, you can't expect your people to do it. So, you know, it's, and I see so many churches saying, well, I train my people to do evangelism. Well, you train them by showing them and you do it along with them. So, all right. Thank you guys. Appreciate it.